Good morning on 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. You could call in. Let your voice be heard at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. Or you could call abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Thanks for joining the program this morning. Mike Levins here. We got a lot on the plate for you this morning. We're going to look into the Muslims all killing each other over there in the Middle East. Why is it happening? There actually is an explanation. And we've heard it before in the news. We've heard Shia and Sunni. We're going to take a closer look at that today and what that means for you, the listener, for us as a country, and some interesting parallels that you may want to hear regarding Islam and Christianity. Again, that number is 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. Let your voice be heard this morning. Well, we keep on getting reports. The newest development, I guess, to talk about is, of course, Yemen, of the Middle East basically going up in flames. There always seems to be something else happening over there. There always seems to be some kind of rockets that are being launched at Israel, whether they're Russian-made or who knows what. You have to really look into it, I guess. But whether it's that or whether it's Iran-backed terrorism or Saudi Arabian-backed militias or terrorism, and there's always something eventful happening in the Middle East. Well, there is an interesting explanation for all of that. And you've heard it on the news. I've heard it on the news plenty of times. And I never really looked into it until recently. We've heard, when you talk about Shia Muslims, we've heard that kind of talking point on the news. We have Shia Muslims and then Sunni Muslims. And we always hear either one side is killing the other. They're always shooting at each other or beheading each other, or it's just nuts. And that's a lot of the source of the conflict in the Middle East. Or at least it would appear that way. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. There's a lot of history behind it. I don't want to get stuck in the history. But before we really delve into all of that, let's go ahead and get the latest that is happening in the most current conflict in the Middle East, which is Yemen. Now, this is an article from FoxNews.com. Kerry says, U.S. won't stand by in Middle East as Iran steps up Yemen involvement. That's, of course, Secretary of State John Kerry warned Iran over its increased involvement in Yemen's civil war Wednesday, vowing that the U.S. would not stand by as the Middle East became destabilized. Now, this all started about 5 years ago, right? The Arab Spring started with the protests in Tunisia, and then we had Libya, and then we got involved there with Muammar Gaddafi, and then there was Egypt and President Mubarak, and we called it the Arab Spring. It's this great Arab revival, if you will, or not even a revival. It's not like they necessarily had democracy, but essentially the Arab people rising up and saying, we want democracy, we want democracy. And social media was the major vehicle for that. First time in history anything like that had really happened substantially through social media as far as organizing protests and really overthrowing governments. And that's how it was reported in the news. It was reported as this great push for democracy among the Middle Eastern countries, and that we as the West should be supporting it, stand by it, and get 100% behind it. Of course, there are issues in Egypt, though. The Muslim Brotherhood trying to get involved in elections, which is a radical Islamist group. And there, of course, the current president actually participating, and because Muslim Brotherhood was elected, current president actually came about as an overthrow of the election of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. So there's much more to the story, and that's going to be my point this morning. There's a whole lot more to the story than the mass media, necessarily reports. And that's where we get into this whole Shia and and Sunni thing. Well, what do you think? Do you have any information to contribute this morning? We'd love to hear it. Call 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. Abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Let's keep reading this article. This is the latest in Yemen. Meanwhile, Iran President Hassan Rouhani said Thursday that a Saudi-led campaign of airstrikes against Yemen's, here it is, Shiite rebels, known as Houthis, was a, quote, mistake. Rouhani did not single out any country in particular, but said, quote, you learned that it was wrong. You will learn, not later but soon, that you are making mistake. There's not even making a mistake. And that's a quote. I don't think they would have missed that. That you are making mistake in Yemen, too. I think them some fighting words there, Joe. That was the president, Hassan Rouhani, and there is a reason why Iran is so behind the Shiite rebels, in particular in Yemen. Well, let's keep reading for the time. Speaking on the, quote, PBS NewsHour Wednesday, Kerry said that Tehran was obviously supplying the rebels, whose military advances forced Yemen's U.S. and Saudi-backed president to flee last month. In response, Saudi Arabia and its Gulf allies have been carrying out airstrikes against Houthi targets since March 26. Iran needs to recognize that the United States is not going to stand by while the region is destabilized or while people engage in overt warfare across lines, international boundaries, in other countries. That was Secretary of State John Kerry. We have an ability to understand that an Iran with a nuclear weapon is a greater threat than an Iran without one. And at the same time, we have an ability to stand up to interference that is inappropriate or against international law or contrary to the region's stability and interest. And those of our friends, Kerry's interview was broadcast on the same day that Iran said it was sending a destroyer and another naval ship to the strategic Bab al-Mandab Strait. Iranian Rear Admiral Habibullah Sayari was quoted as saying that the ships were part of an anti-piracy campaign, to, quote, safeguard naval routes for vessels in the region, by the English-language state broadcaster Press TV. The comments by Kerry and Rouhani, as well as the Iranian naval maneuvers, underscore the growing international tensions surrounding the chaotic fighting in Yemen, with the U.S. shoring up the Saudi-led forces on one side and Iran allegedly backing the Houthis on the other. Though Iran and the rebels deny any direct military assistance. So, Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren said Wednesday he could not say whether, quote, Iranian money or equipment, unquote, has been delivered to the Houthis, but, and this is another quote, we know the Iranians are partnered with the Houthis and they are working together. So, basically, you've got Iran backing the Houthi rebels, and then you have Saudi-led forces backing the now deposed and U.S. ally, I guess we could say, former president of Yemen, and we have this big conflict. And now you have Iran moving warships into the theater of war, and they're saying it's just to protect cargo ships against piracy. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Everyone with two eyes can see exactly what you're doing. You're just trying to put in support. And you're obviously getting involved more in the conflict. Yeah, right. On PBS, Kerry said that there are obviously supplies that have been coming from Iran. There are a number of flights every single week that have been flying in. Those warships are just for piracy. They're not for a supply chain. They're not for naval support. So that's what's going on. Iran is maneuvering warships into position. That's kind of the latest in the whole I guess we could call it another crisis. There's so, don't you get tired of crises after a while? I get tired of it. There's a crisis in Yemen. There's a crisis in Syria. There's a crisis. Oh, for the love, there's a crisis in the world. You know, I get tired of it after a while. It's like, hey, what are you talking about? Come on, there are crises everywhere. You know what happens sometimes? There's a crisis in my bedroom. I gotta get some laundry done. That's a crisis. Nah, not to belittle anything at all, please, because this is serious issues, but we're going to get into it a little bit more. We're going to talk about the Sunni-Shia divide. Iran backing the Shiites and the Saudis backing the Sunnis. Why? Welcome back to the program. Call in at 610-539-TALK. Let your voice be heard at 610-539-TALK or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Sunni and Shia. What in the world's a Sunni? That sounds like you're trying to say sunny. Sunny side up, and it's in a weird way. Sunni and Shia Muslims. I'd like a Sunni along with my... Sunni side up along with my toast. Sunni side up, please. Not scrambled, not overturned. Just Sunni side up. That's all I'd like. Please, on my plate. Well, we're going to go ahead and get into what in the world is a Sunni Muslim, what in the world is a Shia Muslim, and there's a reason. There's a big reason as to why we're even going into this in the first place. Because if you follow the history of these two groups, Sunni and Shia, it explains the majority of Muslim-on-Muslim conflict in the Middle East. In fact, it explains it all. I am not exaggerating, and I'll go ahead and we're going to get into that. Did a lot of looking into on this. I feel like I basically went through a Middle Eastern history class, or nah, I can't say Middle Eastern history class, a crash course in Islam, really, because in order to understand the difference between Sunnis and Shias, they look at Islam in two different ways. Mix that in with some political subterfuge, and you have the makings of civil wars all throughout the Middle East. And that's what's happening right now. And we're talking about the latest in Yemen. Basically, Kerry admitting that they know that Iran is involved in supplying Houthi rebels. They understand, and I don't know why. And I guess he said this, okay, the region is destabilized, and while people engage in overt warfare across lines, international boundaries, and other countries, because Iran is getting involved in Yemen, Kerry kind of takes a shot at the nuclear deal debate. We have an ability to understand that an Iran with a nuclear weapon is a greater threat than an Iran without one. At the same time, we have an ability to be able to stand up to interference that is inappropriate or against international law or contrary to the region's stability and interest and those of our friends. Kerry's interview was broadcast on the same day that Iran said it was sending a destroyer and another naval ship to the strategic Bab al-Mandab Strait. That was Iranian Rear Admiral quoted as saying that they were to safeguard naval routes for vessels in the region. So, we know Iran is involved, and Saudi Arabia is involved. Why, though? The fighting and international involvement threatened to hang over ongoing nuclear talks, which yielded a deal framework last week in Switzerland. The U.S., Iran, and five other world powers are trying to strike a deal by June, though critics have pointed to Iran's involvement in Yemen and elsewhere as a serious cause for concern. Really? And when did you figure that out? I wonder. Wow, that's really, we have a major development in foreign policy across the world, apparently. Iran getting involved in a proxy war is a problem for diplomatic negotiations. I would think so. Let your voice be heard. 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. Or 1-877-667-1180 abroad. 1-877-667-1180. The unrest has also provided cover for Al-Qaeda's Yemen branch, which the U.S. considers the world's most dangerous wing of the group, to, quote, make great gains on the ground. That, in turn, has caused Washington to rethink how it prevents it from launching attacks in the West. Other than that, it's really just talking about the humanitarian effort in the growing crisis in Yemen, that they are running out of supplies and called for a temporary halt to the fighting to allow aid to the country. The World Health Organization said Tuesday at least 560 people have been killed in the past weeks, and 1,768 have been wounded, many of them civilians. It said another 100,000 have fled their homes. That was a Fox News article. So what is a Shia? What is a Sunni? Well, I'm glad you asked. A Shia actually means something. Shias is actually a term. It means something. It actually means partisans of Ali. Not Prince Ali like in Aladdin. Partisans of Ali ibn Abi Talib. And that was Muhammad. You know Muhammad, the prophet Muhammad? His cousin and son-in-law. That was good old Ali there. Why am I telling you that? Well, way back when the prophet Muhammad in Islam went and passed, he needed someone to succeed him, and there was some disagreement over that. A group of prominent early followers of Islam elected Abu Bakr, who was a companion of Muhammad. He was going to be the first leader, it's called a caliph, of the Islamic community. So all these terms that we hear all the time, you know, caliphate, caliph of this, caliph of that, caliph in your salad, I don't know, but they all mean something, of course. But he was elected, Abu Bakr, to be a succeder to Muhammad. And Ali ibn Abi Talib, now he's Muhammad's cousin, he was also favored, but Abu Bakr was the one who actually got elected. There was opposing camps, and it eventually evolved into Islam's two main sects, where you have, that's sects with a CTS at the end, by the way. Shia is a term that stems from Shi'atu Ali, Arabic for partisans of Ali, believe that Ali and his descendants are part of a divine order. Sunnis, meaning followers of the Sunnah, or way, in Arabic, of Muhammad, are opposed to political succession based on Muhammad's bloodline. So that's the basis of it. There's a lot of history in that. So you have the Shias, who basically believed that there was to be a bloodline succession to Muhammad. And then you have the Sunnis, who believe that I'll read it from the article. This is from the Council on Foreign Relations. You can look this up yourself. The Sunni-Shia divide. Sunnis, meaning followers of the Sunnah or way in Arabic of Muhammad, are opposed to political succession based on Muhammad's bloodline. Sunnis do not believe in political succession based on Muhammad's bloodline. Shias do, and there was a great divide. Now, if you look through history, they basically have been killing each other ever since that because of this divide. Why? There's more to it. We're going to get back to it right after this break. So don't go anywhere. Let your voice be heard. Call in 610-539-TALK. 610-539-TALK. 1-877-667-1180 abroad. Stay right there. Welcome back. It's New Day at 1180 WFYL. You call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Let your voice be heard today on It's a New Day. And we were just getting into, Shias and Sunnis, but it's that time. It is that time for accelerating your business with Michelle Faustin. So go ahead, call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. And Michelle.
Yes.
Are you there this morning?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I will let you go ahead and take it away then. And what do you got for us this morning?
Okay, well, we are still here with Accelerating Your Business, the weekly call-in business radio show where business owners, aspiring business owners, or managers or executives can call in and ask whatever question they like. I'm sorry. If for those of you who are listening, I am actually in traffic this morning. There were some snags that occurred when I came in from out of town, so you can bear with me. But yes, it is Accelerating Your Business. The topic that we will be discussing today is the same topic we've been doing the last few weeks, which is called Knowing Your Numbers. For those of you who have been listening, it is an ongoing segment to help business owners do exactly that, to know your numbers and the important numbers that you need to run your business effectively. This is the first time, we welcome you to listening in on 1180 WFYL. A call-in number for any questions that you have is area 610-539-8255, which stands for 610-539-TALK, or 877-667-1180. There's also an email address, which is askmichelle@1180wfyl.com. That's A-S-K. M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E at 1180WFYL.com. I am the host of Accelerating Your Business, again, a weekly call-in radio show from 7:34 to 8 a.m. on 1180WFYL. I am also president and CEO of MJS Strategy. That is a growth strategy and business expansion consulting firm. So in big words, that just means I focus on helping companies to grow, expand, enter new markets, and do so profitably. I've been doing so for a number of years, and this show is a platform to be able to share all the insights that I've gleaned over the years, to be able to share with you and to have the information and the expertise to be able to answer whatever questions you have. Thank you for all the callers who have called in the past, and for those who have taken to call in again, you can call in at the aforementioned numbers. So in terms of knowing your numbers, I always want to start with a recap because, again, I do understand and know that not everyone who is listening in has done so from the beginning of the segment or maybe, again, the first time that you're listening. So the first thing in terms of knowing your numbers is, you know, keeping the key numbers and metrics that are top of mind that you as a business owner or an executive need to understand to effectively run your business, as well as if you're trying to ever raise money in terms of from a bank or a venture capitalist or an angel investor or any other kind of investor, these are the types of questions they'll ask. I mentioned it before, but I'll mention again, you know, in shows such as Shark Tank and The Profit and on CNBC and certain other programs, you see, I think it's another one that's Restaurant Startup, I believe is the name of that one, and several others. I mean, these are reality shows that are on television, but, you know, the premise of what they're doing is the same in terms of, you know, when investors looking at your business, whether just to be a minority investor or majority investor, depending on what the makeup is, they are going to be looking to find out whether or not you know these metrics. So it's, again, very important for you to have them. And for those of you who always want to have capital or extra financing, it's key for you as well. So the first one area that we went over was revenue. And again, we broke revenue down into price times quantity. First, we talked a lot about price in terms of your strategy for that. So understanding very clearly who you want to be as a business or entity in terms of if you want to be the high price leader, if you want to be the low cost leader, or if you just want to be, let's just say, middle of the road and not necessarily compete on price, but then still do value add, meaning your price is in line with everyone else. And we also talked a bit about quantity. And again, quantity, of course, is the amount of units that you sell, whether that's actual physical units, physical goods, or actual tangible services that you provide. And breaking that down to see, again, you know, looking to see how you can effectively plan and map out the quantity that you want, looking to see how much you'll need in order to break even. We talked about break-even point, meaning the amount that you would need to sell to literally come out at zero, meaning covering all of your costs, your fixed and your variable costs, and then afterwards going to see if there's any more demand to actually help you succeed over that number. Then we also talked about customer acquisition costs. And customer acquisition costs being, you know, a tricky word sometimes and a tricky way of calculating because there can be many different pieces and parts of that number. But customer acquisition is pretty much that. How much does it cost you to acquire a new customer? A lot of times people are always looking for, you know, let's just go and get a new customer and just looking at the top line. But, you know, here at Accelerating Your Business and in general, you know, with all the companies that I've worked with, it's always about driving profitable growth. So you definitely want to drive your top line. That's very important. But you also want to make sure that whatever you're doing is actually something that is going to greatly affect your bottom line as well in a positive way. And unfortunately, many companies, large and small, don't always take a look at that. And because of that, they have some issues. So, you know, here's a way that you can actually start to build some of these mechanisms in place. So the first thing we talked about before in terms of quantifying customer acquisition costs is in terms of time. And we said that time is important that you want to quantify. And it's sometimes easier to quantify time for your employees because you know how much you're charging them. You can calculate how many hours they spend, you know, acquiring X customer, and then you do it from there. You can also do that, and you also should do that, in terms of valuing your own time because your own time is valuable. And oftentimes, as a business owner or the business leader, you don't put that into consideration as well. But taking into account what that value is, and then taking into account how much time it actually takes to get a customer is very important in terms of that. Then we also talked about marketing costs and saying that, you know, one of the other aspects of customer acquisition is what your marketing costs are and being able to articulate that, being able to detail what those indirect costs are, what the direct costs are in terms of any traditional marketing that you do, whether that is television advertising or print advertising or radio advertising, which of course I always recommend. But then also you also want to take a look at the social media aspect in terms of, you know, what are you doing, you know, online and how much, you know, time or how much cost that's taking you. A lot of times with social media, you know, sometimes you can directly see, you know, okay, you go ahead and you go on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn, and that directly translates into sales. Other times with social media, you're doing a lot of work, and it seems like nothing is coming to pass, nothing is coming to fruition, but it's one of those foundational areas where sometimes it takes a little bit of time just to kind of build up traction, people to see you enough, you know, whether it's through blogs or this through tweets or, you know, whether it's short or long or the kind of content you bring. And usually over time, that tends to work. Now, granted, sometimes social media can be very effective where you get sales right away. And that a lot of times can be done via your, like, SEO, which is search engine optimization, and other tools that you may bring on to help in terms of your website traffic and traffic to other areas. So there are many different techniques and nuances that you can do in terms of social media, but the long and short of it is that you still have to calculate what the cost is of that in terms of acquiring a new customer. So again, sometimes it may take a little bit longer because it may be more of an influencer than, let's say, a direct way to get new customers, or to be able to have your existing customers buy more. So the same thing with traditional media as well. Traditional media is a little bit better in the sense of you can more so in line kind of do the direct, okay, this is what I spent in advertising and this is what it translated to. Oftentimes more than social media in general. Again, those that premise is not always the case depending on your business and depending on how effective those models are. But the point is once you do do your analysis and you put together your marketing strategy and you figure out what you want to do, after you decide to pursue that, then it's very important to track what the cost of that is and how that translates with the customers. And again, adding that to your customer acquisition cost. The other side is actually looking to see, you know, the longevity of a customer. A lot of times the terminology is called the lifetime value of a customer. So the lifetime value is just that, how much of your customer is worth to you over the lifetime. So let's say it costs you $500 to acquire a new customer, and you have that number down. If someone asks you, you know it for your own self, you know it in terms of running a business and seeing if there's a way that you can, you know, effectively manage those costs, if that's the right cost that it should take to acquire a new customer. But then you want to say, okay, well, then how much of the customers I'm acquiring worth? You know, how long do they actually stay with us and continue to buy from us? So if you spend, let's say, $500 acquiring a new customer, but then you only generate $40 in revenue out of the customer, obviously that's not a good way to conduct your business, right? And that's something that you need to understand and need to know, because not every customer is a good customer. And the same thing that anyone else would ask you in terms of kind of digging into your mindset and financials and how you run your business. Conversely, if you spend the $500 and let's say that customer translates into $10,000, well, then obviously, you know, you're doing something right, because the amount of investment that you're putting in for the customers is actually something that is improving, and it's actually something that's giving you a great return. So you want to take a look at that from a money standpoint. You obviously want to also take a look at that from a time perspective in terms of how long your customers stay with you, you know, how many repeat customers you have in place, if there's anything that you can do to change your current situation, things of that nature. So these are some of the things that we're going to be discussing today, and I hope that you continue to listen in. Again, you can call in at 610-529-8255, 877-667-1180. Email askmichelle1180@wfyl.com. And
welcome back to Accelerating Your Business with Michelle Faustin at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. Call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. That's 8255 at the end there. And we have Michelle on the line with us. Michelle, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Very, very good. Why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Okay, well, great, and thank you guys so much for listening and, again, hanging there with me this morning. I believe we have a call on the line. Hector, are you there?
Hector, are you on the line?
I'm still here.
Hi, good morning, Hector.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you for your patience and for calling in. What is your business question this morning?
I got a T-shirt business, and, you know, it started off as a, you know, little small company, and, you know, now I'm trying to, you know, grow it a little bit more, and I had a simple question. People tell me I need a business ID or a tax ID, and I wanted to know what is that I would have to do. I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
You don't have to hang up. Hello? Hello? Hector? Okay. Well, I will respond. Okay. Hector, if you are listening, you didn't have to hang up. You can actually stay on the phone, but that's okay. I have no problem in answering your question. So you have a T-shirt business. That's great that you've been starting. I wanted to ask a few more questions about it. But in terms of getting your tax ID, that's actually very simple. You have to go and actually contact your state and the federal, and well, actually, you start off with federal in terms of getting that number registered. You literally just have to apply. You have to set up your business for tax purposes anyway, and when you do that, you literally just go to the business arm of the IRS, and they are able to walk you through the forms and the steps you need to get a federal ID assigned. It is important that you get that, and it's great that your friends told you to get that because, you know, you want to start separating, even though you, it sounds like you're small, like you're in a t-shirt business and you're growing, but, you know, you want to get to a place where you start acting professionally, meaning that a lot of times small business owners, especially if they don't, let's say, separate their bank accounts, like you should get a separate business account versus your personal account so that, you know, you can start separating that for tax purposes and then for your own purposes as well. You know, when you do set up a business account, they will ask you for your tax ID. So that's something that you will need to have anyway. If you decide to incorporate, they'll ask you for your incorporation papers as well. If you're full proprietorship, then they'll just ask for some of your basic information. But, you know, regardless, or an LLC, excuse me, then they'll ask you for some of that information as well. But, you know, again, it's very important because we're going to have to start doing tax returns. You're going to have to, you know, start reporting information out regardless of what entity you decide for your business. And, you know, this is a great way to start, let's just say, getting more professional. And as you're growing, you always want to do the things to kind of help get you to the next level. You know, again, even businesses that I have millions of dollars sometimes, you know, they make their books really fuzzy in between personal financing, business financing, and it's hard to decipher for themselves as well as for anybody else, you know, how well the business is actually doing because so much, let's just say, hands are in the pot. So being able to do that, again, is a really, really great way to take some of the, you know, initial steps to moving forward. I would also say, you know, look into all of the other types of reporting that you need to do internally. You should have some mechanisms, you know, in terms of how to track your information, you know, whether that's like software, whether that's like QuickBooks, whether it's, you know, even to start off, basic spreadsheets, basic models and things like that that you have. You know, make sure that you set it up so that people can purchase from you via cash, via credit card, you know, have those PayPal set up, you know, make sure the website set up, you know, start doing these things. So, again, you ask the tax ID question, but, you know, the whole, what I'm hearing from it, and unfortunately not still on the line, but what I'm hearing from what you're saying is that, you know, you're really starting to get into a growth stage. And like any growth stage, you know, you want to go and lay the right foundation for you to actually do your business going forward. So, you know, I hope that my response to you helps. I definitely think you should get that, as well as, you know, you can get a good checklist. A lot of times you can go online as well, and there are certain checklists that you can go through when you're starting, let's say, for a new business owner. Even though you've been in business, I still will consider you new because, again, you are now getting to that, I would call it, more professional stage in terms of how that is kind of framing out for you. So, you know, I hope that you will have continued success in your t-shirt business. I don't know how big you want to grow it, but, you know, having these foundations in place is definitely the right way to get you there.
Michelle?
So, if you're listening, I hope that helps.
We also have Dennis on line two with you right now.
Okay. Well, if you can bring Dennis in, then I know we just have a few more minutes, but Dennis, I'd be happy to answer your call.
Hi, Ms. Paulson. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
All right. I've recently purchased a book, and I had a question. You know, I have a pharmacy that I have, and I'm looking at your book, and I was on page 25 to be exact, and it said about growing your market. The best way to win in the marketplace is to compete, and you know, we're having our shopping center that I'm in is being bought, and you know, the lease that is going to be that we have now currently is going to be going up, and I wanted to know: do you think it'd be my best option to sell? Full disclosure: the lease I pay is about $300 a month, and with the new owner, it's going to be about $700 a month. But they're willing to buy me out. They're willing to buy me out and give me the money. And I was thinking: should I take the money and start somewhere else and move it, or I mean, you know, my customers know me here, but the money is not too bad to move out either. So, you know, in my marketplace, do you think it would be a good idea to move or to stay?
Well, you know, I would just say this. I mean, I obviously don't know all the information, all the different nuances, and I appreciate your call and you calling in to ask. What I would say is this, though, you know, that is definitely a big jump in terms of your lease. So, you know, if you are still able, if that location is going to be increasing, meaning like the landlord is increasing the amount of the lease because something is happening where you'll have an opportunity to get more customers, then you must still look at the kind of cost benefit of it, right? Because not just your existing customers, but if you're going to get more, that's going to more than cover the lease, then it might make sense for you to stay. Another thing that I would definitely suggest is looking into just owning your own building and not worrying about, you know, leasing and instead financing it yourself. I mean, I knew a business owner in the past who was a beauty shop owner, and she had the same situation. They just kept on raising the money, and then she said, you know what, maybe it's time for me to just own, and she's been able to own her place and make a lot more money ever since. So, you know, definitely look into those options. But also, you can look into moving as well. If you don't want to put in the capital to actually own your building, then you can look into other areas with more reasonable prices, but then you also want to make sure that that's an area where you'll still be able to get the customer traffic that you have, or if your base of customers is strong enough where they'll follow you. If you go to another location, then it might make sense. But you definitely want to weigh the cost-benefit of those things and just know that you have options, that you're not stuck in a situation. And in terms of someone else buying you out, that I think shouldn't have anything to really do with the lease, unless it's just that they want to take over your lease and that, you know, they buy out that lease, let's say, per se, to give you flexibility to do other things. But, you know, definitely look at those three aspects, and then whichever one gives you the most benefit, I think that would be the most beneficial for you. Did I answer your question?
You did. You did. And I'll keep on reading your book. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, thank you so much for calling in. This is Accelerating Your Business. The book you mentioned was How to Grow Your Business in Times of Feast or Famine. That is my first book. Hopefully you guys can get it. More importantly, for those of you listening, I appreciate you guys listening in this morning, as well as every week, every Thursday morning on 1180 WFYL.